Midlands Today on Midlands 103 with Tullamore Motors. The Renault Capture. Capture life. TullamoreMotors.ie. When people in the Midlands want to talk, they talk to Will Faulkner.
Hello and good morning. Hope you had a lovely weekend in all the glorious sunshine. It's a little cooler today, and your grass can expect a drink a little bit later on. Now please bear with us all at Midlands 103 because we're quite sad today. We've lost a dear friend, a man who gave so much to so many, whether in the radio business or in the wider community. And Albert Fitzgerald would be best known to listeners for his Life and Times programme and for his excellent music programming over the years. But behind the scenes, he was the man in charge here, and he used his position as a force for good, bringing people together and organisations together as well to promote this part of the country, which he came to love, to raise money for countless causes and to help so many of us individually. And I still can't believe I'm telling you about Albert in the past tense. But that's what life has thrown at us. Also today, two men are under arrest as part of the investigation into the death of a 48-year-old man on a stag night in Athlone over the weekend. And in sport, you hear from the new Offaly boss, Liam Kearns, in our full review from 10:30. When you call, 0818 300 103 is the Midlands 103 comment line. You can text or WhatsApp 083 30 10 103, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. Now, let's take a look at what's happening around the region and around the world, and pictures on the front of many of today's papers from the Tullamore show. For instance, on the Irish Times, you see Camilla McNamara from Streamstown in County Westmeath placing a gentle little kiss on her pony, Jess, who won in her class at the Tullamore show. And they're saying 60,000 people attended yesterday. I would dare say it was more. It was absolutely wedged, and a great return to form after an absence due to COVID-19. And if it's anything to go by, I imagine the crowds for the National Ploughing Championships and indeed the World Ploughing Championships in County Laois next month will also be outstanding. The main story, though, on the Irish Times is how a staffing crisis is threatening the ambulance service, and the response times in 2022 have disimproved compared to last year. And there are so-called Delta calls. These are where it's not necessarily a heart attack, a cardiac arrest, but it is a serious call. The target is to respond in 19 minutes or less. And according to the HSE, its own target is for 50% of calls to be responded to in that time frame, in those 19 minutes. And they are considerably less. They are considerably below their targets. Now, a spokesperson for the HSE points out there has been a 14% increase in emergency calls since 2019, but also that COVID procedures are delaying ambulances and creating offload delays at hospitals. So they're making their excuses or their reasons or whatever point of view you have on it. 480,000 people are in for some good news on the Irish Independent this morning. It says the government is considering a once-off double payment of the household benefits package. It's worth €35 per month. It includes free TV licence, also a contribution to your gas or to your electricity bill, and it is paid to everybody in the country over the age of 70. So this is under consideration again. Expect more of these sort of announcements between now and the 27th of September, Budget Day. And there's also a story on the front page there about luxury cars. So if you drive a Merc, a BMW, an Audi, something that would be very, very tempting to criminals, well, they're becoming even more sophisticated. And it says there has been a 77% increase in the number of car thefts this year, partly driven by Russia. There's a black market in Russia where wealthy buyers fear they won't be able to get their hands on these cars because of the trade war that has erupted. Now, the Irish Daily Star reports on two men being charged after the stag do death in Athlone over the weekend. You see a picture of the victim, Paul Connolly, better known as Babs. He's an Eden Derry man, 48 years of age, and he was injured on that night out. You'll hear what happened in court after the 10 o'clock news. Now, let's go inside the papers. You meet Mark Keeley. Mark is originally from Eden Derry. He's from Tullamore. He's from Tullamore and he has appeared on this programme many times discussing his service in the army. And he spent more than half of his 20 years in the Defence Forces working for the Explosive Ordnance Disposal, the EOD. And it's a very specialist group. It's absolutely elite, highly trained, and their job, if, for instance, an old grenade pops up in your garden, they're the guys who go in. They might have the robot, they have all the high-tech equipment, and ultimately they put their lives in danger to make the device safe. And the headline says, "I was handling live bombs, but shelf packers were paid more than me." Wow. And he's talked on this programme in the past about the meagre pay and conditions that members of the Defence Forces have had to put up with and why the ranks have diminished because of that. But he gives a little extra detail in the Irish Independent this morning. He talks about having to claim family income supplement to support his wife and two little girls, even though he was doing this incredibly dangerous and important job. But that's the extent of remuneration in the army. Very, very poor. So he has now moved on to pastures new with a heavy heart. He works for Intel. He's able to put his skills to good use there. And he's earning vastly more, vastly, vastly more than he was in the Defence Forces. Mark Keeley. Now, Tullamore Show, as I mentioned, lots of pictures, but also a nice write-up by Garrod Keegan in a few of today's papers. He introduces you to, for instance, sisters Laura and Emma Walsh, who brought a bucket of water to their prized exhibit. Such was the heat yesterday, many of the animals feeling the brunt of the sunshine. Their father is breeder Edward Walsh, and his animal won as a calf in 2013. The following year, she was a reserve senior champion, and his focus yesterday was very much keeping them hydrated as much as winning any competitions. 92-year-old Tony Bergen turned a few heads because Tony is an inventor and he has entered the competition at the show for about 25 years, he reckons. And yesterday, his invention was a device to help him slip into a jacket without using his hands, effectively. And very useful, I suppose, if you are in your 90s, if you're in your latter years and mobility is a problem. So he might well patent it and mass produce it and become a millionaire by the time he's 100. May he well live to be. Good morning, Tony. Pat Short is appearing in a new Netflix comedy series, and it's being shot in County Cork at the moment. And he's joking that the reason he got the gig is because he buys his taco fries in the Obama Plaza. OK, that seems like a bit of an odd connection. So the film company that is behind Bodkin is called Higher Ground. And Higher Ground was founded by none other than Barack Obama and his wife Michelle. And so Pat reckons, as a favour for all those times he stopped off in Moneygall for taco chips, they had to give him something back. Anyway, it's filming at the moment and it hopes to screen on Netflix in the next year. Serious story on the Irish Times if you've got somebody waiting on junior or leaving cert results. The State Examinations Commission has been forced to admit it hired unqualified trainee teachers to mark papers this year. Now, they tell the Irish Times it was only a small proportion of the examiners, and there are 4,000 examiners. They don't give actual numbers as to what a small proportion is. But they insist these people were supervised by serving or retired teachers, that all examiners work under the guidance of a team of advising examiners, and that their satisfied quality control standards were in place. Sinn Féin's education spokesperson, Donnacha O'Leary, says it's vitally important that students have confidence in all exam scripts, and we need to examine why this has happened. Does it bother you that trainee teachers would be marking the scripts? I mean, they have to learn sometime. Everybody in teaching will correct exams for the first time. So whether they've... And we're not talking about somebody who's just on their first year of teacher training college. These are people who've just almost completed their professional masters of education. They're very far advanced in their studies. Does it bother you? If so, 083 30 10 103 on text and WhatsApp. Now, I'll give you a few other stories very, very quickly. If you were hoping that 30% rate of income tax would be introduced, that intermediate third rate, not going to happen, according to the Irish Times. The Green Party doesn't favour the idea. So Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach who promoted it, seems to be defeated. It will be a case of two tax rates as we have for income at the moment, but with wider bands and indexing so that it moves with inflation. That seems to be the compromise. Car insurance going up, as I mentioned. That story about robberies on the rise. Car insurance has come down a bit, to be fair. And if personal injury claims continue to fall as they have been, well, the material loss of cars being stolen certainly doesn't outweigh all of the expensive payouts for whiplash and other injuries that are sustained. So I don't think it's an excuse to put up insurance, but watch that space. They may well use it as such. You'll spot the Gardaí looking a little different today. The new uniforms have officially been launched. The two-tone, bright yellow and dark navy blue, soft shell and waterproof jackets will be on display at a town near you. You'll see them on the beat or in the car. And give them a wave and tell them how stylish they look. And finally, weather-wise, plenty of thunder and lightning in many parts of the Midlands last night. It was quite spectacular, actually, in a few places. I saw, if you look up the Facebook page Leash Weather, there was a lovely picture shared. Just this fork lightning coming to the ground. And if you have any pictures, by the way, WhatsApp 083 30 10 103. I'd love to hear them. I saw the lightning, but I didn't hear the thunder. Anyway, today you can expect temperatures to fall a little bit compared to recent days. Temperatures yesterday were in the region of 27 to 30 degrees in many parts of the Midlands, but it's going to be about 20 degrees at its peak this afternoon. And for the foreseeable, for about the next 10 days, daytime temperatures in the region of 18, 19, 20 degrees. So still pleasant, but expect rain in quite large quantities, buckets and buckets, and your garden will be delighted. I'd like to tell you about my friend. Albert Fitzgerald would be known to you as a listener of Midlands 103 for many programmes over the years, certainly excellent in his interviewing in the Life and Time series, passionate about music, eclectic in his tastes, very witty, fantastic storyteller. And behind the scenes, the man who steered the Midlands 103 ship for nearly 20 years, and he worked for the radio station since the mid-1990s, driving sales and bringing his energy into all departments and eventually to the wider industry. and even overseas. And I'd like you to meet some people who worked with Albert over the years and who today, like us here at Midlands 103, and in particular, like his family, Siobhan and Andrew and Stephen, will be mourning his loss. And first of all, I want to say hello to John Purcell. He is the chairman of the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland. It's an umbrella group for the independent sector. John, good morning.
Good morning, Will. And sympathies, first of all, I suppose, to Siobhan, Albert's wife, and Andrew and Stephen, as you said there, but also to you and everybody in Midlands 103, because I know it's a very tough day for you all today, but most of all a tough day for his family. But throughout the radio industry in Ireland, there's a sense of loss and mourning. I've had people contacting me from all four corners of the country in independent radio who knew Albert, who held him in such high regard because of all the qualities that you listed there. He was a fantastic colleague. He was a fantastic and passionate, boss, I would say. He was so proud of Midlands 103, but he was also so proud of his family and had many conversations with them where he spoke with such glowing pride about his two sons. And his loss is being mourned today, but it's a huge loss for everyone who knew him.
Well, indeed. Stephen is our area manager for Laois, and the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, I can assure you. When you think of Albert, and he wouldn't want us to be mournful today, he would like us to reflect on the good times. So what springs to mind?
I suppose what springs to mind is his enthusiasm, his energy. You know, he was enthusiastic about everything. He was enthusiastic about broadcasting himself, about other people broadcasting. He was a fount of ideas. He was a very generous man. He was always willing to share ideas with colleagues from other stations and so on. He was a very practical guy. He was a real doer. He was very generous. He was a man who cared about the business which he ran, but he was also a man who cared about the wider community. I saw his smiling face on many areas of your website when I was looking at the news coverage yesterday, and I noticed one photo when he was the founder chairman of Tullamore and District Rotary Club, and I saw him standing in front of a banner which said "Be a gift to the world," and I think that was very much what Albert was. You know, he gave very much of himself. He was hugely generous, he was passionate, he was energetic, and it's hard to believe that that light that burns so brightly is extinguished, and we're very sad about that.
Indeed. And he shared that gift. And Teresa Hanratty from Learning Waves, which is an industry training body, which Albert helped to set up many years ago, he and many others, she wrote to me to say that he was instrumental in bringing sales trainers and speakers to the network, always willing to share ideas and solutions, and above all, sharing his time. And he was a great support to so many. John, I have to move on. I'm grateful for your time today, and thank you.
Thank you, Will. And once again, sympathies to everybody on Albert's loss. He'll be greatly missed on behalf of everybody in independent radio. You know, once again, our sympathies to Siobhan, Andrew and Stephen, his wider family and everyone in Midlands 103.
Hear, hear. John Purcell, who is the chairman of the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland. Robert Stibe is a former chairman of Tyndall Radio, indeed a former director of Midlands 103, and was once upon a time Albert's boss. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Will. Good morning.
And I know you were so fond of him and kept in touch with him over the years. Can you describe your relationship with him?
Well, I think looking back, it's based on friendship and sort of mutual respect. I knew Albert when Tyndall first got involved with Midlands, well over 20 years ago. And we worked together as colleagues, but always as friends. And Siobhan and the family have always welcomed me. I'm sitting at my desk in England, and I'm looking at a picture of Albert that I was only taken back in April when I came over to see him and the family. And it's just wonderful to see that picture. And if I close my eyes, I can hear his voice, that wonderful voice of his with such happiness and joy. And it's terrible to think that I won't hear it again. And it's very, very sad. And my heart goes out to the family.
Well, we talk about his professional qualities when it comes to radio. Excellent salesman, brilliant generator of ideas, inspiring leader. He motivated people so well. And we had this sense that Midlands belonged to all of us, and we worked for him and did so gladly. But behind the scenes was a man always willing to help and to do so discreetly, not to make any fuss about it. How would you remember him best?
Well, I will remember him for the way that he turned ideas into action. And in particular, I'm so fond of him because I have watched him develop. When I first got involved with him, it was obviously a difficult time when a new owner comes in, and Albert wasn't sure of his position with the old brigade, so to speak. But he just got on with it, and he developed ideas, and he was such a quick learner and such an inspiration to the staff at Midlands. And I don't have to speak for him in that regard, because I'm sure all of you have found that. But I just remember him for the friendship, the way that he didn't have to stay in touch with me. I was just a former boss, but he was proud of our relationship, and I was delighted to come over and see them every now and again. So it's just that joyous spirit of Albert that lives on, and I will never forget it, and I'm sure you won't.
Robert, thank you very much for making time this morning.
My great pleasure, and my sympathy obviously goes to you, the staff, Siobhan, the boys. I'm thinking of you all.
Take care, Robert. Robert Stibe is a former chairman of Tyndall Radio, indeed a former director of Midlands 103. Now, that's the radio side of Albert, but he will be missed in the wider community, and his contribution and his energy and his force for good and to get things done is going to be, that loss is going to be dearly felt, in particular in Tullamore and District Rotary Club, and its president Owen Sheehan is here. Good morning, Owen.
Morning, Will.
Just give us a sense of what Albert would have contributed to over the years.
Well, I suppose, first of all, Albert was key, the keystone of the Rotary Club in Tullamore and by wider extension, other Rotary Clubs in the Midlands. Obviously, we want to pass on our condolences to Siobhan, Andrew and Stephen. And as per the previous speakers, I'd like to reiterate the fact that literally this radio station was his third child. And literally, there wasn't a day went by, but he mentioned it in some shape or form as part of his communication. He's a fantastic person. I mean, there's no doubting it. He was exuberant beyond belief. He grasped life in a fashion that I don't think I've ever seen any 20-year-old grasp, to be quite frank. He brought people together, which was, and it's his fantastic ability to do that. He was inclusive. He was altruistic. He helped. He would know people that you wouldn't think he knew, and he was able to make contact with people and bring people together. Like, that was his big fact. He was able to bring things together and put a plan together. He was well able to think outside the box as well, which is something you don't really expect from people. But he certainly, if anything, and I know you could see his leadership quality here in the station, and I know you're all grieving today, and I mean this is a very sad day for you, but you know, this is Albert's baby, basically, this radio station. So we've known him in Rotary. He was the president of the Rotary Club in 2003 and again in 2016. And he spearheaded and drove an awful lot of very positive initiatives that scaled nationally. He was never afraid to put his hand up to volunteer for something.
He was very progressive as well. If I recall, he was the first president to bring women into Rotary.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, he obviously was keen that, as I say, he was all inclusive. There was no one that was refused in any shape or form, and he welcomed everyone in. And obviously, everyone was given a job then as well, you know what I mean?
Because
he was good.
Of course,
he was good at delegating, you know what I mean? I mean, we were all, I mean, I remember distinctly we ran a Be Safe, Be Seen campaign with the Road Safety Authority, and as the radio station here were involved in it. And we got involved in it because we were just in the medical, in the orthopaedic business. And he drove that whole agenda, and we worked away, and we got contacts, and we managed to, you know, persuading air ambulances and the National Ambulance Service, and through various linkages and networking, he was able to draw in people that I thought would never come to us.
Yes, and indeed. That was Kilbeggan, as I recall, and the Carver Commissioner came down, and it was a massive, massive event. And then he networked all of the Rotary clubs to distribute all of those Be Safe, Be Seen stickers. And that's just one project of many.
There was many projects. I mean, for a man that was involved in a commercial entity, which is the radio station here, and it's understandable, he really translated that out into community, I suppose, community good. And I kind of look around, and he, you know, the Tullamore Town Historical Walking App, the charter document, the street furniture, these are all little things that the Rotary would have done. And in association with other sort of voluntary organisations, he was a very, very much a protagonist of volunteerism. And, you know, I suppose looking after your society and trying to better things. And he, I think, to be honest, you know, he loved Tullamore and he loved the Midlands and he really lived life to the full. And I think the Midlands, you know, should, you know, and on behalf of the people in Rotary, we just like to thank him for everything he's done. And a lot of it has been extremely positive, and it just sets a little seed down. He's always good at setting the seed down and leaving you off and letting you mull on it and then chasing you.
Positioning, he used to call it, and positioning something.
He's positioning you. He used to do a lot of that. But he was very personable. There was nothing, you know, he would try his best to do anything for you. And, you know, you could ring him morning, noon or night. Now, unfortunately, he would ring you morning, noon or night as well.
Absolutely, yeah. But that was the deal. And it was a two-way street. And I think we should speak to the decency of the man as well, because that was a quality he had in spades. And I recall in the darker days of the recession post 2008, and there were many companies that perhaps couldn't afford to advertise on the radio station, but they needed to. And Albert was very generous to them to try and get them over the hump. And again, it was a two-way street, and it would pay back in spades later. But there are people who might have gone to Albert for help. And I recall even one man telling me this morning, after he got married, Albert dropped around a washing machine to the house because they needed it, having just moved in and so on. But he had that decent streak. And I don't know what else to say about Albert, the community altruist, Albert, the friend. Maybe you'd share a little bit insight on that, because I know the two of you were close, apart from Rotary.
Well, I mean, you'd meet him. He just had circles of friends. I mean, he was involved in motorcycling. He was, I never thought I'd say this, but he became a water sports advocate, and he was into jet skiing in the last couple of years.
He sold me a boat a few years ago. And then I bought it back, he bought it back from me as well. And he loved the Shannon, and always thought the Shannon was one of those resources we don't promote enough.
It was totally untapped, and that was his thing. And I suppose just sociably, and himself and Siobhan, and their love of music, and the two boys were their pride and joy, you know. So, and they still are, and long may it continue. There's an awful lot of traits in Albert and his two young fellas, and I'm sure Siobhan wouldn't mind me saying that, you know. But his memory will live on. We're just all very positive. I don't think I've ever heard him issue a cross word.
Oh, I have. But always, always, I suppose, in the right way, and always would move on very quickly.
Yeah.
Never held grudges.
Forgive and forget and move on. And that was always his kind of his mantra there. And we'll fondly remember him. I mean, he's loads of friends around, and he's, you know, there's people from Dublin and obviously from Mitchelstown and Cork. His family from Cork, and his wider family. Then obviously he's got, I mean, he was known the length and breadth of the country. He was known by loads of people down in Rosslare, Wexford, Dublin, and again in the Isle of Man, and I think
Channel Islands.
Courtesy of him travelling an awful lot, and he would be a guy who you know, you could easily see him walking into a bar and just chatting to the first person he met and striking up a conversation. And he's just a versatility in the man as well, that he could talk to anyone.
Mm. Well, again, something in for the Midlands to be proud of, that under his stewardship, Midlands 103 became headquarters for the group, and he was in effect managing four radio stations at one time. So he had a very full plate. Owen, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Will.
Owen Sheehan, the president of Tullamore Rotary Club. Now, still to come this morning, two men have been charged following the death of a man on what was a stag night and following an unprovoked assault in Athlone over the weekend. Also, how teachers are unhappy that unqualified students have been assigned to mark junior and leaving cert papers. How is it there were not enough qualified examiners in the system this year? First, though, we are still paying tribute to our friend, to a voice that was so familiar to listeners across the region, to a man who was a champion in business and a force for good in his community, and would be deeply, deeply embarrassed, I think, to hear all of these nice things being said about him. But Albert Fitzgerald was the most fantastic storyteller I think I've ever met. And only in June he appeared on our Friday panel and described the time he met Britney Spears.
I met Britney Spears back in 2003 purely by accident. It was actually at the time when the radio station was being bought by the Tyndall family in the UK, and we were over in London, and we ended up in this magnificent hotel, and there were a couple of covered in black SUVs outside and paparazzi. And we took no notice. It was the Manchurian Hotel or something like that. But later that night, after, you know, lots of drink and stuff like that, we were walking back towards Hyde Park, and there was this crowd gathered outside this sort of Georgian building, which was inset off the street, and there was sort of a gate entrance and a gate exit and stuff like that. And sure, we were kind of half piddly. We didn't know what was going on here at all. And so we're walking up, and there were these lads in black jackets with no necks standing with their arms crossed in front of them and stuff like that. So the boss of Midlands at the time was Joe Yerkes, and Joe, you know, was American. So I wonder what's going on there. Sure, he says, I'll ask. And so I walked past the crowd, and I walked straight across the courtyard, and I walked up to one of these guys, and I said, how are you getting on? This is Albert here from Tullamore. I said, well, what's going on here? And he kind of looked at me as if I had two heads, and then he looked to his right, and at the gable end, this, you know, four-story gable end, projected on was a picture of Britney Spears. And apparently she'd made some road film back in 2003, and this was
right.
You know, the premiere was on that night, and this was the after party. And with that, the black SUVs that had been in front of the Mandarin Hotel pulled in.
Mm-hmm.
And the doors opened, and literally from me away to you, who hops out with Britney? And she turns around, and she does this big wave to the crowd. They go, whee! And then she turns around, and there's just me and this bouncer kind of standing there. You know? And I said, how are you getting on? And she goes, hi. And she just walked in the door. And I came back out, and Joe said, what was all that about? And I said, it was Britney Spears. I said, I was just talking to her. Yeah, wearing your damn goddess. So off we went in down to the Ritz, which was closed. And after that, we went back into work the following day.
Yeah.
That's my Britney Spears story.
That's Albert Fitzgerald at his best, telling stories. Let's hear about Albert the Friend. And Brian Cunningham is somebody who was with him until the end, and I know you're missing him immensely, Brian. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Will, and good morning to the listeners as well. And you know, I was just listening to that piece, and it's hard to believe that we won't hear that voice anymore. I have to say, it's been a roller coaster, and he was, as all your callers said, from John to Hone to all the different people today are saying about him, I've never seen as many people, grown men, cry over the last few days, because he had that effect on people. He was very much, firstly and foremostly, a wonderful friend, a loyal friend, someone who had words for everybody, someone who, I suppose, had time for people. And sometimes a lot of people, we're running around and busy with our own lives and different things like that. Fitzy had a word for everybody. And, you know, it just doesn't seem right that he's not going to be in this place. And firstly and foremostly, this morning to echo our sympathies to Siobhan, who was, as he described, his everything, to the two boys, who was his best legacy. And he was very proud of them. And I know that Stephen is there with you in Midlands, and his wonderful team, you yourself, Will, and his wonderful team at Midlands 103, who he was so proud of. He was very proud of who they were, what they had become. Some of them had gone on to further their own careers. And you have to remember, he started so many people's careers as well in radio and broadcasting. But as a friend, you couldn't get better. You couldn't guess, you know, you just couldn't get better. And, you know, today, you know, you're hearing stories from the Rotarians, who's the founding members, and all the different people that he touched. And it's easy to see why he touched so many people's lives.
He had an irrepressible spirit. He 100%. Was immensely positive. He had this energy to get things done, to overcome obstacles. And I think that is perhaps why it is so hard to accept that he is no longer with us, is that flame being quenched just doesn't seem real.
And a lot of people, he wanted even to the very end, you know, his sickness was private, and it was, he didn't want a big fuss. He would hate tributes, he'd hate all of this. He would, you know, he was very much a man that very much a straight talker, had an infectious smile. The first thing he did, he had a great bear hug for you, or firm handshake.
Oh, yes. Oh, the handshake was important, yes.
And it was always the way. And in fairness to this world, is so much at a loss because of his untimely death, because it doesn't seem fair that he had everything just right. And then all of a sudden, he's taken from everybody so soon and way before his time.
Well said, Brian. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Will.
Good morning. Now, still to discuss today, is it okay that unqualified trainees correct an exam as important as the Leaving Cert? Where do you stand on that? And in sport, the new Offaly boss, Liam Kearns, says it's a county he can identify with. And most recently, he guided Tip to an All-Ireland football semi-final in 2016, which was their first since 1935. So the Kerry native has high hopes for the faithful county. More on that in around 20 minutes' time. Now, let's get up to date on developments in court, as two men have been charged following the death of a man in Athlone over the weekend. Paul Connolly had been on a stag night, well known in the Eden Derry area. Paul is deeply missed in that community, and there have been two men charged, as I mentioned. Tom Chute is the court reporter who was watching this. Tom, good morning. Tom, maybe you'd set out the details as heard in court, please.
Sure. Yeah, there was a special sitting of Mullingar District Court late on Sunday night after the arrest of two men in connection with the incident following the death of Paul Babs Connolly from Eden Derry. They were unemployed man Sean Munley, who was a 35-year-old man from living in the Irish town area in Athlone, and there was also a hardware store employee called David Higgins. Now, he's from St. Paul's Terrace, also in the town, and they appeared before Judge Alan Mitchell. They are both charged with assault causing harm to Mr. Connolly, and they also have an additional charge of engaging in a violent disorder during the same incident at Church Street in the town in the early hours of Saturday morning. The court was told that following an incident, Mr. Connolly was knocked unconscious and subsequently died.
So, obviously, all of the detail has yet to come out, but what did we hear about the events that transpired?
Sure. Detective Sergeant Kevin Craig, he gave evidence of arrest, charge and caution, and he outlined how after each man was charged, they had no reply after caution. Now, he went on to explain to the court that it was alleged unprovoked assault. Now, Mr. Munley did not apply for bail, and he was had a straight remand in custody, and he will appear again later this week. However, the co-accused, the younger man, David Higgins, he did make an application for bail, and it faced, he faced an objection from Detective Sergeant Craig, who cited the seriousness of the case. He described the incident as an unprovoked assault. He objected to bail due to the seriousness of the incident. He said that, Mr. Connolly suffered punches and kicks during the alleged attack, which he also said was captured on CCTV. Now, during his exchanges and questioning with the defence solicitor, he did accept that Mr. Higgins was not a flight risk, or, you know, in that there was a real possibility that he would evade justice, because he lived in the town. Gardaí knew where he was. He lived with a close family member. He also accepted that the young man had no prior convictions. And then there was some more discussion about the nature of the alleged incident, without going into too much detail, but he explained that with the defence solicitor, Michael Cooney, he accepted that the incident, it is believed to have had two sections, which he said happened minutes apart, and it was during the second phase that Mr. Connolly was knocked unconscious. Now, furthermore, he went on to say it was alleged that the 18-year-old man was involved in the earlier part of the incident and was not known either to the co-defendant. So, following
all right,
the,
so the two men who've been charged don't know each other?
That's what was said in court, yeah.
Right.
And so, further, so following various submissions from Defence Minister Michael Cooney, Judge Mitchell held that the threshold hadn't been reached to deny bail to David Higgins, but he had to mark the seriousness of the case when he set bail.
So what conditions did he attach?
Sure, he set a bond for Mr. Higgins of $2,500, of which it must be fully lodged. He also approved a close family member to act as an independent surety, and that relative must lodge another €2,500. So he went on to say and warned the young man that he was going to have to obey what he described as stringent conditions, and these including signing on daily at the local garden station, obeying a 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew. He was warned he can't have any contact with any witnesses in the case, and he had to surrender his passport and any other travel documentation, you know, and undertake not to apply for any new or duplicate ones. He also had to continue residing at his current address and remain contactable on a mobile phone so Gardaí can reach him at all times. He was warned that, you know, also, you know, that breaching any of these terms, once he has taken up the bail, that breaching any of these terms can result in bail being revoked. And he was granted legal aid, and he hasn't taken up bail. He wasn't in a position to take up the bail on Sunday night, so he was remanded in custody with consent to bail. He will also appear again on Thursday. Now, the hearing on Thursday will be via video link for Mr. Munley, but if he intends to make a bail application, he must give notice, 48 hours notice to Gardaí. And similarly, if David Higgins has taken up bail, he will. The judge expected him to appear in person on that date. Otherwise, he'll probably appear via video link.
Tom, we'll talk to you again later in the week then. Thank you for taking our call. Courts reporter Tom Chute. Emlyn in County Offaly writes, it's great to see over 70s getting a very small bit of help, as being discussed at the moment in the budget. Yes, this is the kite flying at the moment, that there will be a double payment of the household benefits package, in effect 13 months in the year instead of just 12. Emlyn goes on to say, I cannot help but notice the working class aren't getting very much at all. Everything price-wise is spiralling upwards, except wages. I wasn't a frontline worker during COVID, but I was busy in work every day, and I didn't have the option of working from home like a lot of people. And certainly didn't get a €1,000 bonus, which I don't, by the way, suggest frontline workers are ill-deserving of, but so too are others. We're now facing a winter, and I cannot help but notice a lot of chat about the lack of electricity, and data centres are being blamed. But are they really to blame? A lot of workers are at home. Surely that adds extra strain on the grid. More usage, and our growing population needs electricity. The electricity companies don't appear much to increase the volume, except closing down Lanesborough and Shannon Bridge. The text concludes by saying, I think it's a good time for the current government to wake up and realise a lot of what's happening in the electricity market is their own fault due to a lack of planning and not because we have an abundance of data centres. Rant over. And one more text. Eddie MacDonald called about the Tullamore show and he wants to praise the show itself. But he would encourage the organisers to look at the parking and the traffic management plan for next year. He says he arrived early so he could head home early, but was stuck in the car park for over 2 hours. Where the cars led to was a dead end. The only way you could get out was to reverse, and he said the stewards were powerless to help. There were elderly people and families stuck in cars with no access to toilets or water in yesterday's heat. So he wants to highlight the issue because it did ruin what had been a great day up until then. So maybe the organisers should take note. 083 3010 103 on text and WhatsApp. But again, just to stress, he did say it was a great day. Otherwise, every event can be improved upon, and we always try and learn and build on success. Now, next, how comfortable are you that unqualified trainees would correct an exam as important as the Leaving Cert? And we'll also hear why that situation has arisen this year. Thank you for all of the messages and the well wishes, and we will pass them on to his family. And Michaela sums it up very well on text, saying he was clearly very important to all at Midlands 103, larger than that, important to the people of the Midlands at large, and by all accounts, larger than and full of life. Condolences to his family. And I know he counselled me on many things over the years, not just in work, but in life. And he told me on several occasions that you will have a deeper appreciation of love whenever children come into your life, and it is a special love. And to Andrew and to Stephen, you know this already, but you are his legacy, and he absolutely adored you and was so proud of you. Now, next discussion. If you're a parent of a child in junior or Leaving Cert, what do you make of this story in the Irish Times this morning, where the State Examinations Commission has admitted a small proportion of examiners for those papers were unqualified trainee teachers? Now, let's point out, not just in first year and raw in the door, these are people who were progressing at an advanced stage towards their professional Masters of Education. And everybody has to start somewhere. And there will always be a first time to correct exams if you're in the teaching profession. But as one listener called earlier, the question really is about quality control and what direction and supervision is given to any examiner, not just one who is a little wet behind the ears. Let's tease this out with Michael Gillespie. He is the General Secretary of the Teachers Union of Ireland and he lives in Tullamore. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Will.
Can you give us an understanding of how the system works?
Well, these would be correctors. Now, as you rightly said there, these would be PME students doing their Masters in Education. Now, unlike when I did it, I would have done a four-year degree and then a one-year HDIP. These people are doing, the rules changed a couple of years ago, and they do a two-year HDIP Masters. Now, we believe that's excessive, 6 years in training. But they are people who we've become very dependent on. If you remember last year, I think I was on the radio about the lack of substitutes, and we changed their university program, that two-year program, to try and make them available to do substitution. And we became extraordinarily dependent on them over the last 2 years because of COVID, doing substitution work. So now it's a natural progression. We're now a bit depending on them to do some corrections. Now, there wasn't that many of them used, and it was only PME students. So these people have their degree qualifications. They will be working, like all correctors, to a strict marking scheme. And remember that every student will be entitled, I think it's the 9th or 10th of September this year, to view their Leaving Cert script and appeal it and get it recorrected if they have a problem. So there's huge accountability and checks and balances in the system. And a junior cert student as well will be allowed to recheck check their grade if they're not happy with the result they get.
But once anybody has marked a paper, regardless of their experience level, is there another layer of checking after that?
Yes, there'd be supervising examiners who'd be checking papers continuously to make sure that the standard is main, you know, whatever the marking scheme that's been agreed and applied at the marking conferences is being applied consistently across the board.
And do they check every paper, Michael, or do they just take a sample?
They'd be, the advising examiners would be taking samples of each group that was being corrected. But I'd like to point out, if you think about it over the years, the one thing that has been always consistent in the country has been the quality and the brand of the Leaving Cert and the State Exams Commission. You know, they've not been afraid to, you know, remember a paper was given out a couple of years ago and they withdrew the paper straight away and reissued the exams. You know, they keep the standard of the SEC, the standard of our exams. You know, it's a brand that carries throughout the world. So there's no danger of that brand being affected in any way in this.
But if the supervising examiners are taking random samples, do you know if they pluck more samples from those who have less experience?
Well, I mean, if there was, we'll say, inconsistency showing up, maybe they might be taking more from an examiner. But remember now, the marking schemes are very precise and an awful lot of guidance is given at the marking conferences, and these all examiners would have total access to our advising examiners. If in doubt, they'd make a phone call to check if there was anything on the paper. Mm. So it's a very, very well-designed system by the SEC. Now, remember, it's been 2 years since we've had exams. Remember, 2019 was the last time we had a full set of state exams, and that's one of the reasons we've had people who've left teaching because they've retired or whatever. So that's why we've kind of almost got a perfect storm here of fully bringing back the exams after the calculated and the accredited grades, you know, after a 2-year break. So that's why there was a slight recruitment problem in getting examiners.
And would you know roughly what proportion of teachers would continue working to correct exam papers?
I don't follow the question. Sorry.
So you've got teachers who decide during the summer they're going to correct exam papers, and then others decide they're going to take their holidays. Which proportion would be examiners?
Oh, God, I wouldn't be able to tell you that now. I wouldn't know the percentage. But I know, like, the SEC would be recruiting sufficient examiners and or correctors. And it's a multifaceted task, because we have people not just correcting the paper exams. We have some of the artifacts, you know, that are created in the second components of assessment. They're all being corrected. So, you know, and we've also got second components of assessment that are corrected during the year. So there'd be a huge proportion of teachers involved in it, but involved in, you know, not just in the summer, as I said, with orals and the practical exams, the artifacts have to be corrected. So there's a huge range of teachers. So I couldn't give you a
I'm trying to, I suppose, understand why. Because obviously there's additional money made available to teachers for this, why more wouldn't be interested? Is it just an onerous administrative task that at the end of a long year many just don't fancy doing?
Yeah, I think as well you've got to remember that the last 2 years have been particularly difficult in teaching with COVID. I mean, we had to rip the classrooms back to the bare walls so that we had enough space to maintain the distancing that was advised. So teachers have been under an awful lot of strain over the last 2 years. I mean, they upskilled almost overnight to online learning when the schools closed. Maybe didn't get it right the first time, but certainly the second lockdown were very, you know, had improved hugely on the online. So we have a tired profession, and we also have, and again, we've spoken about this before, a recruitment and retention crisis. You know, teaching itself is not attracting teachers. We're not attracting people into the profession. One of the reasons we've always said is the 6-year qualification period. Now, we're using those 2 extra years now for substitute work and whatever, but they're not going into it because of the 2-year training period. It's a huge financial burden on families. You know, 6 years in college to become a teacher. So that there's a whole myriad. There's almost a perfect storm here of the profession struggling. And next year, we already have heard of schools who are having problems filling advertised posts in September. So the recruitment and retention problem is getting worse in what is a demographically growing second level population. Peak second level, the number doing exams, the number in second level is not going to reach its peak until 2025, 2026.
Michael, appreciate your time. Thank you for taking the call.
Thanks, Will.
Michael Gillespie is the General Secretary of the Teachers Union of Ireland. Hilda in Shinrone says, Will, I have more confidence in a teacher's ability, even if they're a student, than I have in the government's willingness to pay the going rate. Look how student nurses were treated during the pandemic. And Brian in Portlaoise wants to know if this is a record. He has just made 10 calls in a row to Portlaoise Courthouse without success. So if anybody there happens to be listening, he would like you to answer the phone, Moshe de Hulle. Now, let's catch up on all that's been happening in sport over the weekend.
The Monday Sports Review, brought to you by Slater Kia. Introducing the new EV6 fully electric SUV with a range of over 500 kilometres. Find out more at Slater Kia Mullingar.
David Hollywood, good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Offaly has a new senior football manager, Liam Kearns, was announced on Thursday evening. Give us some background.
Yes, yeah, so we finally got some white smoke in terms of an Offaly appointment. We are now waiting for the hurling appointment, which has been somewhat shrouded in celebration and controversy in equal measure. Potentially All-Ireland winning manager Liam Sheedy could be part of that setup, but that's all prospective. No word at all regarding the Laois senior hurling appointment either. So let's get the housekeeping done and dusted in that respect. The footballers do have, though, a new star to look to. And that is Liam Kearns. He actually has quite a connection with the Midlands, ultimately. He replaced Mick O'Dwyer and took over the Laois senior footballers, brought them to one of their multiple Leinster finals in that era. That was in 2007. Like I said, his roots in the Midlands. His mother's from Laois. His father played for Greg Cullen. Mm. He is, of course, a Kerry man himself. And he is now the Offaly football manager. Previously, those who follow the game will know that he has notable achievements with Limerick and Tipperary. Most recently with Tip, he brought them to an All-Ireland semi-final in 2016. He brought Limerick to a Munster final in 2004 after having substantial success with their under-21s, where they won successive Munster titles and got to an All-Ireland final. So in terms of the background of Liam Kearns, that's a gist of an idea of what Offaly fans have to look forward to. And there was, I suppose, a lot of coverage in the build-up expecting maybe Tomás O'Shea to take over from John Maughan. Former Kerry All-Star and All-Ireland winner O'Shea was well-liked by the players and many expected him to take the role. I think he was interested in it as well. But
who else was in the frame?
There was, apart from Tomás O'Shea, Declan Kelly was inevitably linked owing to his success with underage Offaly sides, and as well as that, Bernard Flynn. Tomás O'Shea looked likely to be the choice now, and Declan Kelly for the future. Declan Kelly's busy with both club as well as professional obligations and, of course...
So his day will come.
That's what we think, as things stand. As things stand, the I think the committee we're aiming for, as I said, O'Shea, who ruled himself out owing to a change in working circumstances, that created a practical obstacle. And then the committee, which is three Offaly board members, two independent two independent adjudicators, let's say. They selected Liam Kearns. He's on a 3-year deal. They're going to sit down and have a chat after those three years to kind of review and figure out if they want to go forward. The backroom team is being assembled at the moment. I'd say 4/5 of it sound like they're taken care of, if you're to believe what Liam himself has said yesterday. We'll get a solid news on that in a week or two. In terms of Liam Kearns and Offaly football, the question was put to him by Will O'Callaghan on our Inside Line sports show yesterday as to why Liam Kearns chose Offaly football.
I got the call. I went to meet them with an open mind, and you know, I did my due diligence on Offaly, and you know, on the basis of everything I found out and knew. And from my conversations with Michael Guyton and his committee, I felt that this was something I could really get stuck into over the next few years. And I made the decision based on, as I say, all of those things. And you know, there was a number of other factors to take into account as well. But certainly they ticked an awful lot of boxes as far as I was concerned, you know.
And you mentioned at the outset probably how important Faithful Fields is in all this, as a training facility and to get all the strength and conditioning and football work done. I mean, pretty much every manager that's been coming through the county in the last while, like Leo O'Connor, the Offaly minor hurling manager who worked with Limerick for quite a few years, has said it's up there with UL in terms of the facilities that are available. John Mahon, your predecessor, was always very complimentary about what's been developed in Kilcormac. I would think when you're assessing a job, having a facility like that within a county has to be a big bonus.
It's hugely important, and it's you know, to have a home and to have a place where, you know, and what I love about it, actually, Kilcormac is the tradition. You know, you go in there and you know, up on the walls you can see. I mean, I again, this is another factor for me. I grew up, at least in my 20s, I can still remember the Offaly hurling and football teams that were winning All Irelands at that stage, you know. And like I would have been obviously being a Kerry man, I was in Croke Park when Offaly stopped Kerry doing the five in a row. But I like that Offaly team anyway, you know, the Lowrys and Liam Collins, and Corrins was great. I really admired him as a dual player, and you know, I would have huge regard for Offaly and their traditions and the size of the county and the way they were able to win hurling and football at Ireland at the same time. Like, we were looking at them with envy and wondering how they were doing it, really. So you know, I'd certainly Kilcormac, and I'd have to say that the chairman and the county board and the committee, you know, are very ambitious for Offaly and you know, really want to drive the thing forward, and I think they're making great inroads. And again, you know, the minor hurlers got to a final there this year, and very, very unlucky not to win it, an All-Ireland final. So again, they're starting to show green shoots in both hurling and football again. And as I said, the ambition that they have for Offaly is very, you know, it's very marked when you talk to them.
Does he come across as an uncompromising character?
Yes, certainly there's, I would say, a reputation he has for being that, a pragmatic manager as well, who has cut his cloth depending on his measure, I suppose. And he took over Clonagnail in Roscommon in and around the time of the pandemic after his spell in Tipperary. And just an interesting line when he was speaking to Will that I've pulled out for our listeners this morning is a bit him about talking about his time in Roscommon and the commitment or otherwise of his players on that panel.
I you know, I did intend having another go at it this year, but it transpired that 7 or 8 of the Clonagale players were going abroad, and I didn't see any point in trying to build on their last year then when that was happening. So I called it quits at that stage. The one thing I do demand really is that if I'm giving all my full commitment to it, I want the same commitment from the players, and if I don't get that, that definitely makes my mind up for me as regards how long I stay in any project that I'm working on with a team, you know.
Well, that's pretty unequivocal, isn't it?
I think that's pretty interesting, isn't it? And especially in the context of Offaly having a lot of young players and certainly players at the other end of the spectrum as well. We'll get onto that in a moment. Before we look at the question of the older and younger makeup and blend within the football panel, let's have a look at the expectations around Offaly football. Once again, here, Liam Kearns on his expectations heading into this job.
I'm going to put no ceiling on it, where these players can go or where this group can go. I didn't put a ceiling on Tipperary and I didn't put a ceiling on Limerick. I'm going to go in with an open mind, and you know, if they're good enough to get out of Division 3 next year, well then that's what we have to do. And if they need a year in Division 3 and it'll be the following year, then so be it as well. And if they're good enough to have a go at the Tarleton Cup, then that's what we'll do. I'm not putting any ceiling on it, as I said. You know, I want them to be ambitious for themselves and to be as good as they can be. What I really want to do is get all the potential and all the ability that they have. And I suppose really, look, you've got to get all the best players playing and you know, get everybody committed to it. And I suppose that's, if we run a good enough show, I would hope that all the players would be, you know, more than inclined to come in and be involved with Offaly and be involved with the Offaly senior setup.
And the interesting thing there is he mentions the players and getting involved, and if he gets everyone on board. And I was at Bordnamona O'Connor Park yesterday, watching Road in action against Clara, and they, of course, Anton Sullivan and Niall McNamee specifically up front at not a tender age at all. but he was as sharp as and many have remarked on this. Niall McNamee has been as sharp as ever recently. So the question has to be asked, considering the strength of the young players coming through in Offaly, whether or not the likes of McNamee have a place in the future with Liam Kearns. And this is Liam's response.
I have an open mind, and anybody can make this team, and anybody can make this panel. If you're good enough and you're committed enough and you want to do it, then you know. And age is not, it's not going to be a barrier, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I mean, like, Niall McNamee has not improved to anybody, and he's been a tremendous servant for, and I've admired him as a footballer. He's a fabulous footballer, fantastic finisher in particular. But I've got to talk to him. Obviously, I'll sit down with everybody, and I will talk to them all. As I said, I want to get all, like, last year there was, you know, Cunningham and Owen Carroll were travelling. You know, you had two young fellas there, two of the best young fellas, John Furlong and Cormac Egan, injured with long-term injuries from after the under-20s. And then you had, Rigney and Keane Farrell, two of the better players, also out with serious injuries. So, like, that's six or seven players that would be huge in any county, not to mind Offaly. So, as I said, I have an open mind, and I'll talk to all players. And there's no player that we can afford to say no to, or that we don't want you. That would not be my case. And I'll judge players on their commitment and their what they do on the training ground and how badly they want to play for Offaly. That's the way, you know, that's the way I'd be going to approach it.
So, nice dilemma to have. Seasoned veterans who still have plenty in the tank and promising young blood coming up through the ranks.
Yeah, exactly that, Will. I think if you get the attitude spot on, then the age profile of a player becomes relatively irrelevant. You don't want top heavy in terms of age or one way or the other. Ultimately, you do need
the blend.
That's it, exactly. And there's every opportunity and chance that's what Offaly Football have going forward. But this is all circumstantial guesswork until we see the footballers in action, I suppose.
Let's move on to the club championships. And this weekend we had the Westmeath and Offaly footballers, and then hurling encounters in Laois. So let's start in the Armagh County.
Yes, there were wins for Rathdowney, Errol and Clough Ballacullagh over Ballinakil and the Harps respectively. They both topped their groups with 100% record now. On Sunday, Barris and Ossory Kilcotton, they drew with Rosnallis. Camras were ultimately and eventually easy winners over Castletown. Clough Ballacullagh, as I said, they topped their group, followed by, in this order, Camras, then Castletown, then the Harps in Group B, Rathdowney, Errol on top of Rosnallis, Barris and Ossory Kilcotton and Ballinakil in that order.
Moving to Offaly?
Let's move to Offaly then. As I said, I was in O'Connor Park and that was a really great game actually. I've seen Clara a couple of times so far this championship and they had a really tough game against Eden Derry. Player numbers were low, conditions were bad. Everything slightly more in their favour on this occasion despite being big underdogs against Road. They were beaten, but they put in a very good performance and it was a really entertaining day of action in Tullamore. There was four games down for decision. They were the final group games of the Offaly Football Championship. Tullamore ran out clear winners over Cap and Kerr, maintaining their 100% record. Eden Derry similarly overcame Duro with minimal fuss. And as I said, Road and Clara, good game. Clara will regret a red card they got in the first half. A daft moment. We will gloss over it and leave it at that. Straight red for a dropped boot or a stamp, as it were. They lost by 4 points ultimately. And Forban and Shamrocks. Forban were 3-14 to 3-11 winners. This game was marred by an injury to Kieran Dolan. Nasty knee injury. A report is saying today that he's likely to be discharged from hospital. So great credit to the people who attended to him on the pitch there. That game was delayed significantly to tend to that injury. And it looks like, hopefully, he will be back up on his feet sooner rather than later.
So what did the brackets look like?
So that's the end of the group stages, as I said. We now have Tullamore and Road go straight into semi-finals as a consequence of topping their respective groups. Eden Derry are in the quarters against Shamrocks, and it's Clara against Forban in the other quarterfinal.
Westmeath, finally.
Yes, indeed. Tang surprised a few here. They beat Colucan, who hadn't lost until this weekend. On Sunday, Tyrrell's Pass were narrow winners over Athlone, 110 to 11 points. Moat All Whites, they were 3 point winners over Rosemount. It finished the Downs 113, Colry 2-8. St Lomans were winners over Mullingar Shamrocks, of course, a bit of a Mullingar derby, that one. And Coralstown Kinnegad, they registered a 1-point win over Garry Castle in TEG Cusack Park on Saturday. Jerry Russell was there for Midlands 103 and had a chat with Coralstown Kinnegad senior manager Liam McNeil, who paid tribute to the strength of his bench.
Liam, a tough and a tight game, and in the end you got out by two. Your bench worked well for you.
I did know them lads have trained very hard all year, and look, you have to trust the bench, and in fairness we do trust them, and that's what they're there for in the modern game. Look, it's the bench that the All-Ireland final in Kerry, it's the bench that wins games, and that's the way it is.
Nothing in at half time, it was 1-8 apiece, the kick of a ball, then after that they went up 2, went up 3, you always came back with a couple of points, and you got level then, and then it was a crunch time. They got a crucial goal that near the end, 28 minutes in, and it looked that. But you were back with one nearly as quick.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, at that's the way these games swing. And look at Garry Castle. You have to remember the many county titles they've won in the last 10 or 11 years, and they're fighting for their lives out there this evening. And they did fight for their lives. Only 2 weeks ago, they were very unlucky against Lomans, the top team in Westmeath. Like, they were leading, I think, in the 58 or 59 minute that day. You know, so we knew they were in for a real battle out there today, and we got it, and we just came out the other side of it.
So at this moment, giant top position in the championship, is a good place to be now.
It is now. Whatever, 5-6 weeks ago we played the Downs here and we lost by a point. We were bitterly disappointed that evening. We put a lot into that game and came away with nothing, and you're 72 hours later, you're out again, and your whole season can fall apart very quick against Mullingar 72 hours later. But the lads look very deep in them 72 hours, and they got to show back on the road against Mullingar and then Callery and again this evening. So they've worked really, really hard as a group of young lads. They're very young, and to come out on top against Garry Castle seems a huge, huge credit.
Now let's move on to soccer, and, well, locally, Athlone Ladies give us more reasons to smile. They're on a bit of a roll.
They very much are, Will, and there's a small bit of separation occurring now between the top three in that table and the rest. Pemount dropped points against Dublin Waves over the weekend. Athlone were 2-1 winners on the road to Cork. That was in Turner's Cross. That was important as Wexford and Shelburne both picked up 3 points from their game. So it looks like it could be that group of three at the top now, but that is contingent on results continuing to go the way of the Athlone Ladies, which they've been doing so far, which is great.
Man United supporters would like to press skip at this point.
They would, yeah. Absolutely.
What was the score against Brentford?
Yeah, it was 4-0, but it was 4-0.
And early on?
35 minutes, and that's never happened to Manchester United, certainly in the Premier League era. And, you know, I think I personally thought that they couldn't play much worse than they did against Brighton the previous weekend, their first ever home defeat against Brighton in their history. And they went well beyond that in losing 4-0.
Not what Ten Hag would have hoped for, but
hey. No, it shows the scale of work he has on his hands. Elsewhere in the Premier League, Chelsea and Spurs, they played out a cracking 2-2 draw yesterday. Conte and Tuchel on the touchline. A severe handshake from Thomas Tuchel led to a fracas, and there was plenty before that. So certainly entertaining fare in London yesterday. Arsenal and City were relatively impressive in winning their games, and they look like they're going to be as consistent and superior as we kind of expected throughout the season. And a good win for Nottingham in their first Premier League home game since 1999. They picked up 3 points, which could be crucial for their bid to survive. I want to mention the League of Ireland, the men's code, I should say. They distinguished themselves in Europe this year, particularly Shamrock Rovers. They're guaranteed Europa Conference League group stage football after beating Scoopy over two legs in North Macedonia and back in Tala. They have a playoff against Ferencváros to see if they can get into Europa League, which will offer more prize money. But as things stand, Will, the tournament they've already qualified for lands them a minimum of €15 million, which is compared to €200,000 for winning the League of Ireland Premier Division title. You know, you've basically got to go and win it for 15 or multiple years in a row, my maths is terrible, to get anywhere near the prize money they're going to land by playing European football. So that's a big one for them.
Mildly disappointing weekend for Irish golfers.
Yeah, it was. This is really a phase of the golfing season where you want to see a golfer you follow or support, as we do with Shane Lowry and more broadly the Irish golfers. You want to see them getting momentum at this point. Rory McIlroy has usually played himself right up to the top of the FedEx standings in this period for the FedEx playoffs. And Shane Lowry, he finished tied for 46th. He shot a 69 at the St. Jude Invitational, slips to 38th in the standings. Roy McIlroy missed the cut, slips to 9th in the standings. Seamus Power missed the cut, down to 37th. The top 70 play the BMW Championship this week. After that, the top 30 get to the finale. So obviously Lowry and Power have work to do.
Let's conclude on athletics. We've less than a minute left and we want to hear Paul O'Donovan. He's always a tonic. Take us through what happened in the European finals.
Yeah, so credit first to Shane Ryan. He's got his roots in the Midlands and he got himself to a European semi-final. But rowing is where we're going to finish up on here. Ireland were in gold medal winning form once again. Fintan McCarthy and Paula Donovan in the lightweight double sculls. They have lost one race in their entire history of a partnership together once. So they're Olympic world and now double European champions. And Paula Donovan here discussing his race tactics.
No point worrying what the others are going to do too much. It's not like you can we can pull into their lane, but you get disqualified. But I went up to Italians before they I gave them a big old shoulder as they were launching the boat. It kind of shook them, and they knew what was going to come then, like down the middle of the track. And fortunately, then Fintan was able to step up and deliver that then to them, the final blow, as they call it. You know, so it worked out well.
He's always so honest, so refreshing. And don't cross him. Paul O'Donovan. Thank you very much, David.
Top man, Will.
David Hollywood, who will be back in a few minutes with the Midlands 103 Sport at 11. Now, that's where we leave it today. Thank you, Sinead, for putting the programme together. And thank you very much for listening. Mary Kennedy, the broadcaster and personality, is Brian's guest on That's Life after the news.
The Monday Sports Review, brought to you by Slater Kia. Introducing the new EV6 fully electric SUV with a range of over 500 kilometres. Find out more at Slater Kia Mullingar.